Bruce Pratt in studio for this week's edition of Sports Lit 101 as we talk more about a book we discussed last week. The author is a friend of the program, was on with us to discuss his wonderful book, Collision of Wills, Johnny Unitas, Don Shula, and the Rise of the Modern NFL. His new one is an incredibly compelling read, The Fast Ride, Spectacular Bid, and The Undoing of a Sure Thing. Jack Gilden, welcome back to Downtown.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Man, this was such a good book, and I guess, is it safe to say that this is a pretty appropriate book for people to be reading over Father's Day weekend?
I mean, I hope so. I hope that for Father's Day, Mother's Day, Secretary's Day, Grandmother's Day, whatever you have, I'm hoping that people will want to read it.
Yeah, fathers and father figures in this book, and as you point out early on, there are really two stories about Spectacular Bid, the one we think we know and the truth.
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, that's what it's all about, because the one we think we know has been kind of set in stone for about 40-some years or 40 years, and the one that we didn't know, I mean, it was never known, really, until just now.
Well, Jack, an argument could be made, a very compelling argument could be made, that Spectacular Bid was as great a racehorse as there ever was. And those of us who saw Secretariat run away with the Belmont would say, if we didn't know the story behind this, well, I don't know, that's a little far-fetched. But when we learn the story and we learn about the people involved in it, it reads almost like a Shakespearean tragedy. There was a few acts of hubris along the way that led to the horse not winning the Triple Crown. Could you give us a quick thumbnail of the major players, of Ronnie Franklin, Buddy Delp, and Jack Myeroff, to sort of set this up for us?
Yeah, I mean, you got it right. Those are the main players. So I think you said Jack Myeroff. That was the father.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right.
It was Harry Myeroff.
Harry.
And so in Baltimore, he was, he was a big shot. So he was a land developer. Back in the post World War II period, from the late 40s or early 1950s until the 1970s when the story takes place. In Baltimore and in Maryland in general, land development was kind of like what being an oil baron is in Texas. I mean, it was a source of big money, big political influence. Somehow, weirdly, it was inextricably tied up in politics and the track. And Mr. Myeroff was one of the most successful and intelligent practitioners. And then his trainer was a man by the name of Buddy Delp, who kind of started off when he was in his early 20s. He was taken under the wing of his stepfather, a man named Raymond Archer, who was a really good trainer here in Maryland. And then he ended up going out on his own. And when he was still in his late 20s, his entire stable burned up in a horrible barn fire. And so he was left with only two horses out of about 34, and he had to rebuild. And in the same year that he lost every horse and rebuilt, he won the overall state championship for victories. It was like an entire baseball team going down in an airplane crash in the middle of the summer and winning the World Series anyway with minor leaguers. And then, of course, the most compelling figure of all somehow was the jockey, who was a teenager, a guy by the name of Ronnie Franklin, who came from a little blue-collar suburb right across the river from Baltimore called Dundalk, which was essentially a mini little Pittsburgh, where steel production kind of drove everything. And so he came from a blue-collar family with a nice mother and father, but he was, dropped out of school at the age of 15, was taken to the track, and he came under the influence of Buddy Delp there.
Buddy Delp's other influences on young Mr. Franklin were not the best, as we learned. The late 70s, early 80s, I was in the entertainment business, so the pervasiveness of cocaine in society was not something that escaped my attention. But we have this young guy, and before you know it, he's involved in stuff that he shouldn't be involved in, and he gets involved in it because of Buddy, who is acting as his father figure. I found that so odd.
Yeah, well, I found it very odd, too, and at first I found it hard to believe. So while you were in the entertainment industry, I was a young guy, probably a few years younger than Ronnie Franklin, And I would see Buddy Delp on television all the time. I would see Harry Meyerhoff on television all the time. Mr. Delp spoke with a very thick Baltimore accent. And, you know, he took a lot of praise. He was always on television. He was always, you know, talking about what was happening at the track. And he was, you know, he was seemed like a guy who was, you know, he was kind of a working man, but he was respectable and highly thought of and very bright. And when I came to find out that he was the main figure in bringing down the young jockey, that it was hard to believe.
We're talking with Jack Gilden about his book, The Fast Ride. Another character who emerges in the book that I didn't expect to hear about. Apparently, when he was complaining about the press as the nattering nabobs of negativism, Spiro Agnew should have felt pretty good that the national press didn't dig deeper into what was going on back in Maryland in those days.
Well, I mean, what was going on was a really unholy connection between land development and racing and politics. And Spiro Agnew was the most glaring example. As you recall, he became vice president of the United States. It was all somehow tied up in racism. And he became vice president of the United States, which delivered the South into the hands of Republicans, the party of Lincoln. It was unthinkable, but somehow Spiro Agnew became the man to do it. But back in Maryland, he was accepting bags of cash for favors, and he wasn't the only one. He went from the Baltimore County Executive's Office to Vice President of the United States in an astonishingly short period of time, and his successors in the County Executive's Office and the Governor's Office of Maryland were all caught up in the same web. It was crazy what was going on here in the 1970s.
So then we get to we don't have time to unpack the whole book, and we don't want to spoil it because it's so good, but we get to the point where Spectacular Bid is Meyerhoff's best horse, and Franklin is riding him, and a lot of people are wondering whether it's good to put it in the hands of a young jockey like that, and he only goes out and wins the Derby and the Preakness, and seems to be a horse built to win the Belmont, big, strong horse. Walk us through the events from the end of the Preakness to the end of the Belmont, if you can, you don't have to divulge anything you don't want to divulge, but sort of give us the overarching look at that.
Well, I mean, first of all, let me just say this, that Franklin did a lot more for the horse than just take him, you know, to the Belmont. I mean, he was on that horse won 12 straight stakes victories,
right,
which would be like Joe DiMaggio streak or Cal Ripken streak or something like that. Very hard to do. Nobody had done that in you know, like since the post-World War II era, you know, when a very legendary horse, I can't remember who it was like Man of War, somebody like that did it. And so it was a gigantic accomplishment, and Franklin was on, you know, was aboard the horse for 10 of those 12 stakes victories. It kind of remembered by history as not a very good rider, but in fact he was at times a superb rider. And he did great things with that horse and with others. But for the part that you're asking about, it going from the Preakness to the Belmont Stakes, I mean, basically what I took out of that, you know, that there was an incredible horse story there. But more than that was when the tragedy of Franklin was unfolding. It was becoming very apparent that he was having a nervous breakdown. And he was riding erratically out there and getting into collisions out on the track. And he was caught kicking a horse at one point. He was having increasing tensions with Angel Cordero Jr., if not the most brilliant rider of the 20th century, a guy who was equally intelligent, fierce, and really he was a tough hombre, Angel. He was a tough guy to deal with for anybody, and Franklin's having to cope with him. I mean, there were all kinds of pressures on his head. Some in the press had it out for him and were bashing on him as well. I mean, it just went, you mean, what I saw in that time period was the breakdown of a very, very young guy.
Well, and then the horse has some issues too. And one of the things that I don't think anybody's surprised by is that occasionally there are veterinarians who may stretch the ethical bounds of their profession or the legal bounds of their profession, and to do things to enable horses to be able to compete. And you talk about one famous guy. I don't need you to tell what he did, but if you could talk about this one veterinarian who was one of the most enigmatic figures, I thought, in the whole book.
Well, he was. But, you know, it's one of the most interesting things about this book is how brilliance and corruption went hand in hand over and over and over again to kind of create the situation. I mean, almost all of these people were just fantastic at what they did, but they were utterly unprincipled.
Yes.
And one of them was the veterinarian that you're referring to. And he, he plays a very deep role in the book. You know, he seems to appear and disappear over and over again. His name was Dr. Hardhill, and he is widely acclaimed to this very day as the greatest veterinarian who ever lived, but he was a wild man. He would get into fistfights with anyone at the drop of a hat or even for no reason at all. He was banned from racetracks. You know, even in power and glory, he was a highly controversial figure. And at some point in this story, you know, he comes to treat Spectacular Bid after Spectacular Bid supposedly steps on a safety pin in his stall before the Belmont Stakes. And so Dr. Hardhill is banned from Belmont Park and is brought in surreptitiously. And in fact, to this day, that was unknown, but unearthed by me and through my interviews. And he shows up to treat the horse and make him presentable for the Belmont Stakes. But as it was very apparent right before the race that the horse shouldn't be racing. You could see it in his behavior.
So this book is about, it's about racing, it's about class, it's about power, it's about the culture of the late 1970s in America. But I think Chapter 8 gets to the core of this. Ultimately, if you want to know the story of Spectacular Bid, follow the money.
Yeah,
I mean, there was a lot of money involved, and it had a lot to do with the decisions that were made for both the horse and the kid. And they weren't, you know, they weren't always very good decisions, or very, you know, they weren't very nice guys where money came to be, and money and glory, you know. And I mean, there was a lot of money involved. That horse was every bit as good as Secretariat, if not better. And you know, with every race, the stakes went higher and higher on what he might earn after his racing days.
Well, and the other thing I found remarkable was that Buddy Delp would take Ronnie Franklin's earnings and make it. Ronnie's living in the house, and Buddy Delp's son is Ronnie's best friend. He's living in their house. He's, you know, there's the pool, there's the girls, there's everything. But the money for the cocaine is coming from Ronnie. I mean, when I kept thinking about that, it just kept making me think, well, does he love this kid, or is he pimping him out? You know, it was such an odd thing, and so weird that when he decamped later for California, when Buddy Delp left to go to California, I thought to myself, what was he really leaving behind? Because, I mean, Maryland, Virginia, those are horse racing. Kentucky, that's horse racing country, and he had all the connections there, but he left. What else was he leaving behind?
Are you referring to Franklin, or are you referring to Delp?
Delp.
I mean, you know, he didn't leave much behind. He took his horses and his sons with him and his whole operation out to California. But, you know, you asked the question, did he love them or was he pimping them out? I mean, the answer is very clearly both.
Yeah.
I really believe that Buddy Delp did love Ronnie Franklin, but he was a guy that was very focused on his own needs and knew his own self-interest in every situation. And then, you know, you said it was remarkable how much of his money that the kid's money that he was taking. But you know what's so remarkable about that is that how unremarkable it was. I came to find that Maryland was a place where the young jockeys came to learn and get their career started, and they were often taken advantage of in that way. And so when I first heard that Delp had done it to Franklin, I didn't believe it. And then after digging deeper and deeper and deeper into it, is that there was a whole culture of doing that to the young jockeys. They would get them going. They would be making a lot of money because they were young and light. They'd become the next hot thing. Usually their agents would be the one to move them into the house. They would, you know, inhale all the money together in various ways. And then Then the kid was kicked out when he put on a few pounds and the winning wasn't coming easy, and he would be kicked out with nothing but a fat tax bill.
Well, and
what happened to Franklin?
And they played them off. I mean, the Hispanic jockeys, Latin jockeys, whatever the proper term is today, resented the Caucasian jockeys because they thought they had an easy path. The Caucasian jockeys had problems with the other jockeys, the Latin jockeys, because they thought they were all in cahoots with one another or whatever. I mean, how much of that was just what happens when you put young kids together, and how much of that was handed down from the bosses?
Well, they weren't all young kids.
Right.
So let me put it that way.
Well, that's true.
Some of them were mature men, and some were young kids. In the case of Franklin, he was 19 years old at the year of the Triple Crown, and he's out there with, you know, full grown men, you know, and he was doing battle with them. He went in after the Florida Derby where they colluded against him, and Buddy Delp pushed him in there to confront them, and he used an unforgivable racial slur against them, and he had the target on him. And let me tell you, the Latin riders were no guys to mess around with. They were magnificent riders, and they were tough men. They came out of tough places, terrible circumstances, and they simply weren't going back. I mean, they were bought into America. They were bought into the dreams of it all. They had to fight their way, scratch and claw, to get ahead despite the prejudices aimed at them. And, you know, they felt so unkindly against all the European-style riders, all the white American riders. But they didn't like these young ones coming up and perceiving that they were getting an easy ride of it.
Well, it is a tremendous book. Congratulations on the book, but also on the tremendous amount of research that you did to bring this story to light. It reads like a novel. The Fast Ride, Spectacular Bid, and the Undoing of a Sure Thing. Jack, great to talk with you again.
Oh, I mean, I'm so happy to catch up with you guys, and I appreciate, you know, all the things you said about the book. It really was hard work, and, you know, it just gives you so much pleasure to hear that people like it.
Well, I certainly liked it. I'll tell you, more than just liked it, I loved it. And my wife kept saying, I can tell you really like this book. And I go, why? She says, because you never look up. And that was really true.
Yeah. It is a gripping story, regardless of how well it's written. I mean, it's just, you know, it's something that when you get into it, you can't put it down.
Absolutely. Well, Jack, thank you so much for visiting with us again. We wish you much success with the book, and we'll talk with you again down the road.
Okay, guys. Thank you again. I'll see you soon.
You bet. Bye, Jack.
Jack Gilden, the book, The Fast Ride, Spectacular Bid, and the Undoing of a Sure Thing, here on Sports Lit 101.